Some of my correspondents compare brain worms to visual afterimages, and as someone who is prone to both, I feel their similarity too. We are using afterimage in a special sense here, to denote a much more prolonged effect than the fleeting afterimages we all have for a few seconds following, for instance, exposure to a bright light. After reading EEGs intently for several hours, I may have to stop because I start to see EEG squiggles all over the walls and ceiling. After driving all day, I may see fields and hedgerows and trees moving past me in a steady stream, keeping me awake at night. After a day on a boat, I feel the rocking for hours after I am back on dry land. And astronauts returning from a week spent in the near-zero gravity conditions of space need several days to regain their Earth legs once again. All of these are simple sensory effects, persistent activations in low-level sensory systems due to sensory overstimulation. Brain worms, by contrast, are perceptual constructions created at a much higher level in the brain, and yet both reflect the fact that certain stimuli, from EEG lines to music to obsessive thoughts, can set off persistent activities in the brain. There are attributes of musical imagery and musical memory that have no equivalents in the visual sphere, and this may cast light on the fundamentally different way in which the brain treats music and vision. This peculiarity of music may arise in part because we have to construct a visual world for ourselves, and a selective and personal character therefore infuses our visual memories from the start, whereas we are given pieces of music already constructed. A visual or social scene can be constructed or reconstructed in 100 different ways, but the recall of a musical piece has to be close to the original. We do, of course, listen selectively, with differing interpretations and emotions, but the basic musical characteristics of a piece, its tempo, its rhythm, its melodic contours, even its timbre and pitch, tend to be preserved with remarkable accuracy. It is this fidelity, this almost defenseless engraving of music on the brain, which plays a crucial part in predisposing us to certain excesses or pathologies of musical imagery and memory, excesses that may even occur in relatively unmusical people. There are, of course, inherent tendencies to repetition in music itself. Our poetry, our ballads, our songs are full of repetition. Every piece of classical music has its repeat marks or variations on a theme, and our greatest composers are masters of repetition. Nursery rhymes and the little chants and songs we use to teach young children have choruses and refrains. We are attracted to repetition, even as adults. We want the stimulus and the reward again and again, and in music we get it. Perhaps, therefore, we should not be surprised, should not complain, if the balance sometimes shifts too far, and our musical sensitivity becomes a vulnerability. Is it possible that earworms are, to some extent, a modern phenomenon, at least a phenomenon not only more clearly recognized, but vastly more common now than ever before? Although earworms have no doubt existed since our forebears first blew tunes on bone flutes or beat tattoos on fallen logs, it is significant that the term has come into common use only in the past few decades. When Mark Twain was writing in the 1870s, there was plenty of music to be had, but it was not ubiquitous. One had to seek out other people to hear and participate in singing, at church, family gatherings, parties. To hear instrumental music, unless one had a piano or other instrument at home, one would have to go to church or to a concert. With recording and broadcasting and films, all this changed radically. Suddenly, music was everywhere for the asking, and this has increased by orders of magnitude in the last couple of decades, so that we are now enveloped by a ceaseless musical bombardment, whether we want it or not. Half of us are plugged into iPods, immersed in day-long concerts of our own choosing, virtually oblivious to the environment. And for those who are not plugged in, there is non-stop music, unavoidable and often of deafening intensity, in restaurants, bars, shops, and gyms. This barrage of music puts a certain strain on our exquisitely sensitive auditory systems, which cannot be overloaded without dire consequences. One such consequence is the ever-increasing prevalence of serious hearing loss, even among young people, and particularly among musicians. Another is the omnipresence of annoyingly catchy tunes, the brainworms that arrive unbidden and leave only in their own time, catchy tunes that may, in fact, be nothing more than advertisements for toothpaste, but are, neurologically, completely irresistible.